Yes and no. He, of course, died in 1986, which was still a period where the Soviet Empire was in place, before the apartheid had been dissolved. So he would very much, of course, welcome what happened in the end of the 1980s, apartheid's disappearance and the breakdown of communism. But I'm sure that he would, and I know he's thinking quite well, he will be very sad about some of the developments, including the rise of xenophobia in Europe and the methods used to combat terrorism. He was, of course, deadly against terrorism himself, having experienced in Sweden some terrorist attacks against even members of his own government. But he stressed the importance of respecting human rights while combating terrorism.
And about he also had a clear message for the West, especially for the United States and its politics. Do you think Europe is neglecting his thinking on this in these terms today?
Yes, the reason why he got so famous all over the world, in fact, was probably the fact that he took such an early and clear position against the United States warfare in Indochina. He was probably the first international statesman who protested strongly. I am sure that he would take a very clear position against what happened during the Bush administration, those 8 years, both in relation to the war in Iraq, but also the methods used to combat terrorism.
Mm-hmm. Sweden was, in his days, also a very open society, welcoming people from the third world. Now, the current legislation concerning immigration portrays European Union more as a fortress than an open society, he imagined, for instance. And those people that do enter European Union largely remain without any rights, without any papers, which is currently building a society that is discriminative against a large portion of inhabitants on this continent. What efforts have been taken by the Council of Europe in turning this tide?
There have been very clear resolutions by the Parliamentary Assembly of the Council of Europe on migration issues, where they have emphasized the importance of protecting human rights. For instance, giving everyone who so want a possibility to apply for asylum through procedures. And then, of course, I have myself, in my position, acted for human rights in the migration and asylum policies. When it comes to Italy, for instance, we published two reports and also reacted against the new policy of turning away boats which are coming closer to Italy, a policy which undermines the possibility for those who so wish on such a boat to apply for asylum.
There's also a movement in Europe called Invisible Workers of the World. Are you familiar with that?
Yeah, there are at least 6 million people in Europe today, and even more if you include Russia. In the larger Europe, probably about 8 million there, who are in the countries without having their presence regularized with permit to stay, etc. And they are, many of them, in an unfortunate situation. They are hiding. They are often exploited by employers or by landlords. Some of them have been trafficked, some of them are pushed into prostitution, etc. It's a major problem for Europe, and it's overdue, in my opinion, that the situation of the irregular migrants will be taken much more seriously than so far.
Mm-hmm. So you're still waiting for politicians across Europe to become more aware and willing to change the current situation?
Yeah, there's a need to investigate in more in depth the situation of all those people, and to also recognize that they have human rights, them as well. Even if they don't have the permit to stay, they have certain basic human rights. The present policy in, for instance, France or United Kingdom, to set up quota on how many should be apprehended and deported is not a solution to this problem. On the one hand, we need more workers in Europe, at least when we don't have unemployment. And on the other hand, we are dealing with those who come and help in our societies in the most disgraceful manner. So I think there is a need of reviewing the whole approach to irregular migrants.
Of course, discrimination cannot be wiped out by legislation alone. Mm. In which cases across Europe would you say we have sound legislation but still a large portion of discrimination? And how are you combating it?
Usually the legislation is good, I would say, in most countries. There have been some new elements in the legislation in Italy, which I have criticized. But I think the European Union within the EU countries have encouraged the adoption of reasonable legislation. The problem is more on the side of implementation. To make reality of the laws, a lot remains to be done, both when it comes to how we deal with those who are coming, the first period where they have a possibility to apply for asylum or seek permit, and later on where we have the phenomenon of xenophobia, for instance, which also is targeted against the same group of people.
All right. Could you please evaluate what kind of progress has been established in society respectful to human rights in East European countries since the fall of Berlin Wall, the collapse of communism?
Of course, the fact that there have been elections, even if there have been some problems, in my opinion, with the elections in Eastern European countries, but it has allowed for some space for a freer discussion than before. And there have been some reforms in several fields which have promoted and been positive to human rights. But, of course, I'm focused on remaining problems. And there are problems there in almost all of those countries when it comes to the very basic system of justice, the behavior of the police, the courts and the judicial system and the penitentiary system, the prisons. There is a phenomenon of corruption in those systems which make it difficult for ordinary people and especially poor people or minority people to have full justice when they have problems. There's overcrowding in prisons, although we have that also in the Western European countries. And there's quite a lot of police brutality reported and confirmed from several of those countries. So there are a number of remaining problems, though slowly I think the tendency is to go in the right direction. A key aspect there is the media. Of course, there is more media freedom now than it was during the communist period. But frankly, still there are problems there, relating both to attempts by the state authorities to dominate the media, especially then the television and the radio, and also to clamp down against critical media and journalists who have been critical.
Would you say we've been more or less preoccupied with human rights in this newly developing democratic societies, but would you say this preoccupation has hindered sincere insight of the state of human rights in the Western part of European Union, of Europe?
You mean whether the focus on Eastern Europe has prevented work on Western Europe?
Yes.
That's an interesting question. I think that previously in Europe, but also in the United States, that there was this impression spread that human rights was really a question for the communist countries. They were the ones who violated human rights, but for the rest, there were not such serious problems. I think that's a simplification. The approach we have here is that there are human rights problems in all countries, of course, of different degrees, how serious they are, but no country in Europe is perfect. And as I said before, we have, for instance, a widespread problem of xenophobia, anti-migration, migrant attitudes being spread. We have problems when it comes to discrimination against Roma, which have turned into an underclass in Europe. We have still quite a lot of prejudices also among the authorities when it comes to people on grounds of sexual orientation and gender identity. We have still not a sufficient standard for people with disabilities and their possibilities to have access to services in society, etc. We have a number of problems in Europe, and therefore we often say that there is no ground for complacency when it comes to human rights. Europe is not perfect.
Many fears since 2001, September, with all this anti-terrorist legislation which is imposing more surveillance, more techniques of surveillance of people, all inhabits, and such as phone calls, emails, etc. How would you, what is your opinion on all this legislation that has been adopted, especially in the United Kingdom?
No, I think here we see an emerging major human rights problem. The protection of the privacy of people and their integrity, and to avoid that data, personal data, intimate data about people are being spread and perhaps misused by for political purposes or by commercial interests in order to target their advertising, etc. There is a need to wake up in this field and protect the personal integrity. Therefore, data protection, I think, is of growing importance in the human rights field as well. And unfortunately, the fight against terrorism has promoted a tendency of being irresponsible when it comes to how data are used, how they are collected, how they are used, and how they are exchanged between countries, and not least security agencies of the various countries. And one major problem in this field is the exchange of information between the security agencies, which we have seen during the American-inspired war on terror, where in fact CIA seemed to instruct the national security agencies in Europe more than the governments in those countries, where people were transported between the countries without the governments themselves being informed.
Thank you. You have now touched upon some a problem which might become greater, but regarding the future, do you see new developments in understanding the scope of human rights and the very meaning of human rights?
There are two things there which I think will be very decisive. One is whether, talking about Europe now, whether Europe is prepared to look back at what really happened during the 8 years of Bush administration and the war on terror, and if we're prepared to draw the conclusions, because these years, to me, illustrated very much the danger of allowing the security agencies and other forces to override human rights concerns because there is a threat from outside or from terrorists in that case. And the second very important aspect in this discussion will be the consequences of the economic crisis ongoing. If governments realize that the crisis that we are now faced with really calls for more protection of social rights, that would be the right conclusion. If they feel that there's a risk now that there will be further costs because more and more people will be unemployed and costing money for the budgets, that would be the negative decision or conclusion from what is going on. For me, it's very clear that the economic crisis is an illustration of the need for basic social protection. I'm not sure that all governments draw that conclusion.